Hello and welcome to Select Match Type. My name's Simon Cowgill and I'm joined as always by Christopher Ellis. Hi Chris, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Saw yourself.
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. So it's the start of our TLC coverage this week. We're drifting away slightly, as we mentioned last time. We're going away from WWE and we're going to Total Nonstop Action. It's always good to have a company named after tits and ass, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, what would you say? So, if we said we were doing table, ladders, and chairs, I think we're doing Full Metal Mayhem.
Full Metal
That's what we
Mayhem.
start.
Yeah.
That's what we're starting with.
Well, it is essentially a TLC match. They do use the line on commentary that anything metal is legal. Tables are involved, and they're quite famously made of wood. So, not sure where that comes into
They should have got Jesus involved. Knives,
it.
so it's all
Throw
legal.
everything, get everything in there.
I like the fact that they do have to be careful what they say. They do go, it's tables, ladders, chairs, and
And
then they
change.
realize, and chains as well.
Well,
This is just subtly different enough for us not to be sued.
I'll make a topical joke. The giant event could have come out at TNA at any moment.
I
Yeah,
saw.
it is subtly different, as you say.
It's slightly different. By the way, now you brought up the giant, the huge event. Is I saw he's on commentary because they were talking about who's going to join him on commentary. Is he not an active wrestler for AEW? Has he gone
So
to join the commentary team?
I saw that he's an active wrestler that's going to do some commentary. Why do they think the Big Show is going to be a particularly good commentator? Like, what promo in his career that he's cut do they think is the inspiration for that? I don't really get it.
Well, maybe they've seen something we don't know. Who knows?
Maybe. I have seen lots of people on Twitter as well saying we can finally get the Shaquille O'Neal Big Show match that we've been crying out for years. I don't remember ever crying out for it, but sure, whatever makes you happy.
Well, people have got to have something to get them through the day, I suppose. It's like if they're looking at AEW and their business model is now, right, okay, Big Show is the game changer that's going to put us over the top,
They're gonna have a
then.
Big Show Sting World title feud again in 2021, only like 15 years after the last one.
Oh dear, bless him.
Awesome indeed. Okay, so as I mentioned, we're going to TNA. I know you've mentioned in the past that you used to watch it when it was on like British TV. What are your general thoughts on TNA then, Chris?
I used to enjoy TNA as a whole. It used to be on the Wrestling Channel, if anyone remembers that from
That is a throwback.
back in the day.
That is some
And
throwback.
yeah, so I'll say back when Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Chris Sabin, like just I'll tell you what, all four, those four names are just tipped off the or tripped off the tongue there. Every one of them, absolute quality wrestling.
Yeah.
Real. That's oh, it's such a shame with TNA because you look at how it went and the mistakes that WCW had already shown them not to make when you're
Yeah.
trying to take on WWE. And that the shows back at the start, they were so stacked with talent in that company.
TNA also made themselves different in slightly ways. So they know they could, or they knew they couldn't compete with WWE's production values, and that they weren't going to have. It would have looked shit if they were in like 30,000 seater stadiums for their pay-per-views and stuff. So they sort of tucked away their weaknesses and really highlighted their strengths. So things that made them different, like the tunnel entrance. So they didn't have a big sort of Titantron entrance way, but I always remember watching TNA with someone like walking up the tunnel onto the entrance ramp. I thought that was really cool and something that was very different from what you had in WWE. And also the most obvious one, I guess, is the six-sided ring that they had. And for this match, they had that at this point as well.
Yeah, all went downhill when they got rid of the six-sided ring.
It
But
did, yeah.
the Impact Zone was good. I mean, in the fact that at least they had a place to record every week down at Universal, I believe it was that, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm thinking, yeah, so if I remember right, it was Universal. So they had a place set up to be able to record a show, get the audience in every week from people who just happened to be down there and wanting to watch. wrestling. I do feel it loses a little something putting your pay-per-views on
Yeah, so
in the same venue.
the attendance for this one was 775 people were at the against all odds in 2005, which does not seem like a massive amount. But as I say, I think it's better that than them struggling to fill a massive arena and then having to like hide people away from the hard camera, or hide empty seats rather away from the hard camera by getting everyone to sit on one side of the arena.
Yeah, I suppose the problem is there's no middle ground, is there? You don't really get a small arena. It's either a small
yeah,
a studio or a mass or like a 30,000-40,000 seat. No, you ain't got many kind of 6,000 arenas kicking around.
No, that's very true. So yeah, we mentioned about it sort of going to pot with TNA, and it sort of stems from them bringing Hogan and Bischoff across and them trying to restart Monday Night Wars, and essentially everything that was different about TNA got reverted to what WCW were doing. So it instantly springs to mind the Main Event Mafia and giving all the power to the older guys instead of the guys like AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and those sort of guys, like you say. And immediately when Hogan comes across, changing it to a four-sided ring, because he described it basically as, "I've done this for years, so I know what sells, brother."
Done this, yeah. I'm about to say, yeah. Done this for years, brother.
Yeah, exactly.
Racial slurs, brother.
yeah. So they made a lot of mistakes. Impact. Well, obviously it's reinvented itself as Impact now, and they seem to be teaming up with AEW, which can only really be a good thing for Impact or TNA as it was, I think. I'm not sure if you agree.
Yeah, well, obviously the money that AEW's got behind it
can only help
in the long term, even if it's just TNA surviving, doing more developmental kind of bits and pieces. If AEW's going to take WWE's business model, actually just start setting up those little developmental territories.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some legitimate competition in terms of that, because it might actually force WWE to start using some of their guys that are coming in from NXT and push them properly, instead of, well, we don't really know what to do with them, so let's just take them off TV because it didn't work within a few weeks. Not going to bring up Keith Lee again, but how right I've been proved in the last 6 months, but never mind. okay, so the match for this one. So I should probably actually mention what match we're looking at. So from TNA Against All Odds in 2005, we have Abyss versus Jeff Hardy in a Full Metal Mayhem / TLC match. I'll put the / TLC because then it actually fits in our series. So the setup for this one, so Abyss attacked Jeff Hardy after Jeff's match with Scott Hall at Final Resolution. He then attacked him on the following Impact and put him through a table. So that's enough to set up a Full Metal Mayhem match, apparently, back in the day. With this match, so obviously with it not being on the network, we've had to find other methods for watching it. And I don't know if this went out on the pay-per-view. I can only assume it did, but I wasn't a huge fan of the admin before the match, seeing the ref putting things in envelopes. It was really interesting, or not interesting, but conspicuous that it was envelopes and not a briefcase or anything sturdier than a bit of paper.
That's it. And it's like, how many people did it take to get those things together as well?
Yeah.
There's like 6 or 7 people in the ring trying to attach 2 envelopes.
Yeah, and, crazy.
Oh, let's just comment on the envelopes as well.
Yeah.
I'm torn over whether in the same way as AJ Styles, Undertaker, I'm not going to say buried alive because a Boneyard match.
Close enough.
Subtle differences. In the same way that I'm not sure if that was brilliant or awful. I'm not sure whether having the 2 envelopes is ridiculous or an absolute stroke of genius. I think if WWE had had that and you'd had a triple threat TLC match or any other kind of TLC match, and you've had them absolutely bust themselves to pieces, only to open up the envelope to find they've gone through that, they get the wrong one. I think that would have actually worked really, really well. Actually, no, I'm coming down one side of it. I think actually it's a great idea, but just not done well in this match.
So I think that quite the opposite. I think it's a bad idea. It seems very convoluted that what so one has a contract for a title match and the other is empty. It's for me, it was very similar to, have you ever seen a 2 out of 3 falls match that hasn't gone to the third fall?
No, not often.
You know it's going to happen if it's a 2 out of 3 falls match. So you know the first envelope that's open, that gets opened in this match, you can ignore because it's going to be the empty one. That was the main problem I had with it.
Yeah, but that's because it's the first match in this series. In this series of innovative empty envelope matches.
Yeah, next time you might pick the right envelope and the empty one's meaningless.
Honestly, you wait. There'll be a whole pay-per-view sponsored by Staples.
Doesn't the Mifflin get involved to get the paper?
Yeah, get comedy angle in there, tell you. have Michael back, Michael Scott running around backstage interviewing people.
Why not? Why not?
Oh my God, what a pay-per-view. Who do I speak to get this happen? TNA here with AEW now. Where's Joseph Carr's number?
Get a Fulham season ticket. That's your foot in the door, I think, Chris. Okay, so to the match, the commentary team build up the massive height and weight advantage that Abyss has over Jeff Hardy. And the match starts off pretty much telling that story. So Abyss no-sells punches and a dropkick from Jeff Hardy. Well, I'll bring it up now. What are your thoughts generally on Abyss? So you've obviously seen more of him than me because you used to watch a lot more TNA than I did.
Abyss, really, really good wrestler. Takes the best parts of the whole Mick Foley Mankind character. Only, be honest, a lot more twisted. Well, TNA went a lot more twisted with and a lot more violent than WWE even got away with back in the day. There's some really proper bloody matches with Abyss and proper violence. He's really, I've got a lot of time for this. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, fair enough. I always thought that they sort of built him as a 7-foot monster. As you say, a sort of cross between Mankind and Kane almost. But he wasn't big enough to be that monster, I don't think. Because I'm just looking at his listed height now and he was 6'8". What is interesting, and I didn't know this until just now, but he's actually working for WWE as a producer at the moment.
Oh, that's quite cool. There you go. Still giving something back to the profession. As you're saying about his build, though, yeah, that is a little bit of an issue because when Jeff Hardy stands up next to him, you realise he's not actually that much taller than Hardy.
No, especially when they're trying to build it as this giant versus someone that's reliant on speed. Yeah. Well, I think he's just not quite big enough for the story that they're trying to tell.
And you're saying about, obviously, the match starts off with him swatting away that drop kick. He kind of swats away. I think there's a pattern in this match, which is Hardy absolutely screwing up.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether he's having issues at this time, but that first drop kick is slightly Abyss trying to make it look like he's swatting away, and half Hardy absolutely missing his mark.
Yeah, I think that definitely plays into it. Abyss dominates early, but then Jeff Hardy throws him to the outside and hits a whisper in the wind from inside the ring to the outside via stepping on a chair, which was pretty impressive. There is a few moves that look a bit clunky through this match, but I think that the early stuff was better than the stuff later on. Abyss then gets back into the ring, grabs Jeff Hardy for a press slam. Jeff wriggles free and hits a chair shot to the head. The crowd don't really go crazy for the chair shots in this, like I expected them to.
No, considering it's some protected chair shot as well. Yeah.
I mean, he is wearing a mask, so ahead of the time. But they don't really pop for it at all. Jeff Hardy then uses a ladder to pin Abyss into the turnbuckle, runs up it and hits a drop kick. I thought that was quite a creative spot and a good way of using the added turnbuckles that Six Sides gives you.
Yeah, there's a couple of good moments from Jeff with the offense. Again, the only thing I don't like with the ladder match or with the ladder there is unless you're 15 minutes in and Abyss has been beaten down, he just stands there and just holds the ladder in place
He
while he
does,
watches Jeff
yeah.
run towards him.
Oh no, this this bit of metal seems to be stopping all progress. The commentary team basically at this point tell the exact opposite story that they were previously saying. So what they verbatim say is Jeff Hardy can't underestimate Abyss. That's right, the plucky 350-pound monster that we were talking up has a massive height and weight advantage. Oh yeah, he shouldn't be counted out. It's such an
No.
odd contradiction of what they were saying earlier on.
He's obviously coming in as obviously Abyss with your face coming in
Yeah.
against that evil heel Jeff Hardy, as we all know.
Well, the fans would soon turn on the fans would soon turn on Hardy and TNA for different reasons, as we've mentioned in a previous episode. The crowd do start getting into it with a "We want tables" chant as Abyss starts to slow the pace. And then Abyss heads towards the entranceway and stacks four tables, two by two almost, so two on top of another two. The commentary team describe it as unique. That is not unique. I've seen that in by 2005, I'd probably seen that in six or seven different tables or TLC matches,
Yeah, it's
but never in a Full Metal Mayhem match.
no, that's maybe that's what I mean. This is never everything's unique. They were just running around going, everything's unique. Oh my God, he's climbed the steps. Never before seen a Full Metal Mayhem match.
No.
And to be fair, it's Borash on commentary, isn't it? Jeremy Borash, part of the team.
So it's Mike. Who was it? Sorry, Mike Tenay and Don West, and then Borash was the ring announcer.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. So yeah, because. Yeah, sorry. So it's Mike. Yeah, because it's Mike Tenay getting ridiculously excited and going, I know I've moaned about Michael Cole and his flat delivery before, but Tenay is just something else. Everything is. You remember the Friends episode where Alec Baldwin turns up
Yeah.
again, a up to date reference where
Yeah, one for the teenagers though.
Alec Baldwin turns, but everything is magnificent and magical and so exciting. And that's Tenay calling this match.
Yeah, I can't disagree, to be fair. Abyss gets back into the ring, gets Jeff Hardy into the powerbomb position, but Hardy manages to wriggle free, and this is where his offense starts to get a little bit clunky. So he runs off the ropes and then sort of stumbles his way up the turnbuckle and hits the sort of falling Whisper in the Wind rolling thunder that he, not rolling thunder, the sort of rolling moonsault that he does. He still does to this day, to be fair. I don't understand why that looks better than a moonsault, but for me, it does generally, just not on this in this instance.
I suppose it's because most a moonsault anyone can do. You see a lot of moonsaults over the years from different people,
Yeah.
and while it can't, while it's impressive to do, because we're not coming off the turnbuckle and doing it. So while it's impressive to watch, when you see somebody do something that is a little bit different, it always does look better, I imagine.
Yeah. Jeff Hardy gets quite a lot more offense in now. So he sets up a ladder in a sort of seesaw, with Abyss stood in the corner, jumps over Abyss and lands on the other side, sending it up into his chin. Again, why was Abyss just standing and watching him letting this happen? But you could pick holes in all wrestling if that's what we're going to do, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta have spots, I suppose. Because the argument is he's pinned there. Oh, they just pick up a chair, hit him, hit
Yeah,
him in the face.
just stab him. All metal's legal, as we've discussed. The next spot is I particularly liked this one, even though it was a bit of a botch. So Hardy charges at Abyss, who is sort of tangled in the ropes. Abyss hits a belly to belly from inside the ring to the outside, and Jeff Hardy's legs go through the table. They try and play up how, oh my God, he's landed on the unprotected floor. He's landed on the mats that are on the floor, and his leg has landed on the table. I think that looked better because he didn't go sort of fully through the table.
Oh yeah, it looks genuinely unpleasant. Abyss does brilliantly to actually get him out, get him there, and toss him with that. I'd say what overhead suplex probably, but
Yeah.
yeah, he really the strength and the actual agility to turn Hardy and not just smash him into the ropes at full speed.
Yeah, definitely. Jeff Hardy's immediately fine after that. Gets a chair, hits a twist of fate on the ramp, but the commentary team call it that twist because obviously twist of fate, I imagine, is trademarked at this point.
Yeah, I imagine so. We'll have a lot of that. Yeah. It's like, oh, look at that goose bomb.
Yeah. They head up towards the top of the ramp and Jeff Hardy puts Abyss onto a table. He then climbs up the entrance and hits a pretty pathetic looking swanton bomb. He sort of grabs the pipes that are at the front of the entrance and does a roly-poly instead of jumping through the table.
Here's a problem when people don't turn up to pre-production meetings because you're Hardy and you don't fancy going to them because you have air quotes better things to do for some some
whatever
reason.
Do you mean, Chris?
whatever. When you don't turn up for pre-production, so he goes to the side of the stage to climb up. There appears to be no handholds. There appears to be nowhere for me to actually put my feet or hands to climb up. Well, you know what? I will just shimmy up this clearly unstable and unsuitable piece of metal.
And then no he gets tells me what to do.
No, exactly. No one tells me what to do. Exactly.
It's not like there's thousands of ladders surrounding the ring.
Completely. And then the crowd, and then obviously they're there to meet you before they go, right, Hardy really likes jumping off stuff. So what we really need is a confined space where we really can't stand still at any time.
And we know this is going to happen. So what we'll do is we'll put a barrier at the front of the entranceway so that he can't actually jump without putting his hands on that and falling over it. That'll be great.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's, oh, just, you know, no. You know what he's going to do? Surely they've watched him wrestle at some point before they signed him.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. Or they just signed him. Well, he was in WWF. Like, why don't we grab him?
Yeah, no. I imagine 2 weeks later, there's a meeting where they're trying to get Big Show to do a swanton.
Yeah, possibly. You're that one from WWF, right?
Yeah. Oh God, as you say, it looks awful. Fair play to Hardy for getting anything off of there. Like.
The other thing that sort of detracts from the spot is the commentary team debating whether it was 30 foot. Was it 40 foot? It was about 10 feet.
I can't believe he's jumped from the moon.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Clearly they're trying to make exaggerate it. I actually thought the cameraman did a good job because if you notice, he's looking at it from underneath the table, so it looks like he's jumping from a far greater height, and you never actually see the one from like behind or level, which yeah is a good decision. But don't try and pull the wool over my eyes with was it 30 or 40 feet?
Who knows? At this point, who cares?
Yeah. So Jeff goes back to the ring, pulls out a huge ladder from below the ring.
A huge haddock.
A huge haddock. Oh. Goes fishing. Yeah, pulls out a ladder that's literally the same size as the ones in the ring when it stood up outside. So yeah, it's quite a hefty ladder. What's annoying though is he has to climb almost all the way up it to get to the envelopes, which means that the other two that were in the ring are redundant in this match.
Yeah, is a good point. So, I'm not quite sure what to do with that. Yeah, because surely some, again, pre-production. Do they know and sit there and go, tell you what, never going to be able to reach them with these ladders.
How are we going to reach them? Well, we'll have ladders. Do you want to measure? No, we've got ladders. It'll be fine.
Was it just sitting there with their arms apart? What's that? What's that ladder? 15 foot? Yeah, I suppose.
Shall we get one big one just in case? Yeah, let's do that. So yeah, Jeff pulls the massive ladder out. Takes about 6 years to climb up it. He grabs the contract and rips it open. This was another reason I had a problem with it being envelopes. He literally tears it apart. If there's a contract in there, the contract's going to be made of paper, so it's also going to have been ripped.
Oh, that was the whole storyline that was going to come after him. The whole
screwed by his over eagerness.
Yeah, the whole legal action storyline that we're going to go with.
Yeah. So yeah, as you might expect, because there was two envelopes, Jeff Hardy's made the wrong decision, not for the first time. Oh, and he grabs the empty envelope. Meanwhile, Abyss comes back into the ring. He hits a hard Irish whip to Jeff Hardy, who tumbles over the ropes and sort of goes through the tables that Abyss had stacked earlier. Abyss climbs up and wins. Meanwhile, Jeff Hardy is back up. And he's selling the frustration by kicking the shit out of the rest of the tables.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about the Irish. Right, okay, so Abyss Irish whips Jeff Hardy, who then has to dive over the top rope. He doesn't hit the rope and flip over. He runs towards it and thinks, right, dive out of the ring will stop me having to hit these dangerous ropes.
Yeah.
No, just no. No.
Even if it had gone perfectly and he'd bounced up over the ropes, first of all, the tables weren't next to the ring, so he was going to have to do a dive anyway. But also, who's ever thought an Irish whip's a good spot? Why don't we do that? We saw Abyss earlier going for a powerbomb. I imagine the idea being that he was going to powerbomb him through the tables. Why didn't they go for that spot?
Yeah, there's 101 better things you could have done.
Yeah.
Weirdly, it's that final spot that actually gets the audience chanting.
It does, yeah. Jeff Hardy doesn't care, though, because he sells it for about 3 seconds before he's up on his feet and being like a petulant child because the match hasn't gone how he wanted, I think.
I'll tell you what, I just need to mention, because I'll be remiss not, because it's maybe my favourite one of possibly my favourite thing in the entire match. So the crowd's chanting TNA with half kind of semi-enthusiasm, so fair enough. The cameras go around the crowd to pick out people. It's on these two girls who look like they'd rather be anywhere else in the world.
I did notice that.
They're there. They're like people who have literally their dad or whatever has gone, I want to go and watch the wrestling.
And you've got to come with me because I can't get childcare.
Yeah, and they're there and they're just TNA. It's like, they're like, just kill me now. They look, oh my God, they look so miserable. They do not want to be there. And to be fair, I genuinely cannot blame them.
No, I had high hopes for this match, but it didn't quite meet them. What were your thoughts on that one then, Chris?
Well, that was a match. I'm sure we can both agree.
Hang on, are we just recording like a generic thing for all wrestling matches here? That was a match.
Yeah, that's. I don't want to say that explains why we've not gone to TNA before, but no. God, we could have picked some better examples.
We could. The main reason I picked this one is because it was the first full Metal Mayhem. So I thought it would be a good place to start. And also, yeah. On paper, it's a decent matchup.
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't remember the match itself. So I went into it also with high hopes. Because, as you say, Hardy, one of the originators and innovators of TLC. And I know that Abyss can be massively violent and really, really good. And absolutely neither of those things combined in this match.
Unfortunately not. I mean, it starts off pretty well. We mentioned it. So Hardy starts off with some decent looking offense. They do a decent job of having Abyss come across as the monster, but they seem to move away from that story really quickly. It's not a case of Abyss dominating and Hardy having to sort of hit and run. Hardy gets probably more offensive than Abyss does through the match.
Yeah, and for its
stick to a lane, TNA, come on.
And considering they're selling it as a first match of its type there, they didn't do anything particularly original or anything memorable there that's gonna stick out.
No.
The only thing, when we get to the end of this season, The only thing we're going to really remember from this is Jeff Hardy having to do a forward roll off the stage in order to actually land on a bit.
Yeah. Well, that and also him throwing a bit of a tantrum at the end of the match, which I quite enjoyed. It threw me back to like Christian when he used to have that as his gimmick.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether he was just trying to sell his frustration at losing, or he was just genuinely, oh my God, that was awful.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the height of Jeff Hardy's problems in TNA. So the famous match against Sting is like 6 years away from this. So it's not like, it's not become obvious at this point that he's got a lot of backstage issues. Well, not as obvious as it would be 6 years later anyway. The other thing that you mentioned this was the first Full Metal Mayhem match. I'm glad you mentioned it because the commentary team don't mention it once through this entire match that this is the first one ever.
Yeah, it's... Oh.
You've got the perfect opportunity to set the story there.
Yeah, but as you say, they couldn't seem to decide on what story they wanted to tell. No. So they could have been either going Jeff Hardy as the ultimate underdog coming up against the Beast, or they could have been selling this as the most dangerous match type that TNA have ever done.
Yeah,
there's a lot of ways they could have gone with it, but as you say, they seem to just land in trying to cover all bases and satisfying absolutely none of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought something else that hit the match. So it was fast-paced to the start. There was a few decent spots. But what sort of pulled me away from it a little was the way that both men were back up within seconds of any sort of spot. The selling in this match was pretty non-existent from both men, really.
Yeah, that's fair enough from Abyss if you're going to portray him as the monster. But yeah, don't have Hardy popping straight back off the mat when Abyss is at him.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. We've already mentioned the other two problems I had with it. So why have the end spot as the Irish whip and two envelopes being very convoluted? But I can understand why you think that would be a good idea. So almost to sum TNA up at this point, on the same night, there was a 30-minute Iron Man match between AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels for the X Division title. Why couldn't we have watched that? Why couldn't that have been Full Metal?
I'm about to say, yeah, Christopher Daniels AJ feud was amazing.
Yeah, but the main event, of course, was Jeff Jarrett versus Kevin Nash for the title. In microcosm, one of the main problems with TNA.
Oh dear, bless them. Bless we can't only say dearly departed DNA, but no, they refuse.
They're like about to die.
Like that stubborn yeast infection, they still refuse to go.
I don't want to know about your yeast infections. Thank you very much, Chris. So up next for both men, so they carried on the feud. So Jeff Hardy beat Abyss in a Falls Count Anywhere match at Lockdown at the next pay-per-view. Lockdown was such a good idea for a TNA pay-per-view. So having every match in a effectively a cage, but then you've also got added stipulations around it as well.
Oh yeah, Lockdown, really good pay-per-views. A lot of the best 10A stuff came from Lockdown.
Better than the situation we find ourselves in, let's say. A better version of Lockdown.
We've done cage matches as well.
We haven't done cage. We've only done.
We've done Hell in a Cell. We've done Hell in a Cell. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we've managed not to somehow jump across at all the Lockdown.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure when we get to cage matches, we will look at Lockdown. Hopefully, not a shit match from Lockdown. But
we picked Abyss, Jeff Hardy for Lockdown.
Yeah, the follow up to this one. Abyss, in the end, doesn't get his title shot. He loses to AJ Styles at the next pay-per-view. In fact, sorry, I've got the pay-per-views the wrong way around. So Jeff beat Abyss at Destination X, and then Abyss loses to AJ Styles at Lockdown. So AJ Styles then takes the title shot. It was due to happen on Impact, but it ended up happening at a pay-per-view. So no consistency in booking, no follow-through in storyline. It's almost like... Raw in the year 2021.
Yeah, that's there's a lot. I love wrestling, but I don't think I've ever sighed as much in my life as when I've done these shows.
No. No, We are asking questions around logic. Maybe they shouldn't come into this, but anyway. What are you giving this one as a star rating then, Chris?
I am... Oh, God. It's difficult. No, I'm... I was going to say, was it middling? No, because I think it was on the poorer side of middling because it was 18 minutes without anything that I particularly loved. So
I'll tell you what, one thing for it, being 18 minutes, it didn't drag at all. I didn't feel like I was bored or
no.
When's this going to end? So that's surely a good thing, right?
Well, yeah, although they say that, it's probably shorter than that because we come into the video with them trying to get the envelope showing up. So I think the match only about 7 minutes long, probably.
Setting up the envelopes takes the 11 minutes, the rest of the 11 minutes, yeah.
I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
Wow.
I'm 2 stars I'm giving this match, which is low for me. I'm generally very much on the positive side when it comes to wrestling, no matter how bad it is. But no, 2 stars.
2 stars. I'm going slightly higher. I'm going 2.5 for this one. Dave Meltzer didn't give this one a rating. He only gave the AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, and the main event star ratings from this pay-per-view. I'm not sure why he was thought he needed to be selective around it in 2005, but he did.
What was the star rating for AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels? Just to upset us.
It was highly rated. Let me just dig it out. I'm not editing this out. You've asked me the question. So.
Don't say we don't do stuff on the fly.
So, in fact, he didn't even give the main event a star rating. Why? So, the star rating for AJ Styles versus Christopher Daniels, 30-minute Ironman match, was 4.75 stars.
There you go.
We'll find that on Daily Motion and watch that as a treat for ourselves rather than the listeners, I guess. The other matches are also quite interesting. So the ones that he gave ratings for, DDP and Monty Brown versus Bobby Roode and Eric Young.
Good talents, again, Eric Young and Bobby Roode.
Back when they were beer money, I assume?
No, because it was James Storm and Bobby Roode.
Of course it was.
Yeah, sorry. Eric Young was great, but they never really seemed to find an absolute nailed-on perfect character for him, which is a shame because, again, he was actually really good.
He's still in Impact as well, Eric Young. Anyway, we're going miles off topic here.
It's been a while since I watched Impact, so they might have nailed his character by now. Yeah. But back in the day, he kind of flitted around without being able to peg down a perfect choice for him.
Yeah, fair enough. And the other one was Chris Harris and James Storm versus Kid Cash and Lance Hoyt. 3.5 stars. Why couldn't we have watched one of those? I'm assuming they would have been better, but never mind. Any closing thoughts that you've got then on against All Odds 2005, Chris?
Yes. Well, not on this match, because I think we've said everything. No, TLC matches are good. Just stick with us. It will get better.
Wait till we get to some actual TLC matches and you'll start to enjoy the series.
Yeah, exactly. Ignore our Full Metal Madness bonus edition.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so that'll do us for Against All Odds 2005. Up next, we are going for the first ever actual TLC match. So we've gone for the first ever Full Metal Mayhem. Now we're going to go to TLC, which is the match type that we've selected for the series. So it makes more sense. Why we didn't do that one first, who knows, but... If matches can't have logic, we're allowed to get away without logic, right?
Yeah, we're just going to throw random time shifts. We're just going to ignore things that have happened.
It's like the Royal Rumble series where we went 99, 2001, 98, 2000. No one will notice. You don't have to listen to them in order. It's fine. Okay, well, thank you very much for listening. I feel like we've dropped off the face of a cliff here.
We're a disorganized podcast for a disorganized world, so
it's not the podcast the world wants. It's the one it needs. There we go. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Come and say hello at Select Match Pod. Thanks as always for listening. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Si.
I will speak to you next time.